Krishna Krishna Hare Hare. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Srimad Bhagavatam, second canto, chapter 9, answers by citing the Lord's version, text 30. Yavat Sakha Sakhyu Iva Isha He Krita Praja Visage Vibhajani Bho Janam Aviklava He Parikangvani Stita Ma Me Samunadha Madha Aja Manina Yavat Sakha Sakya Ivesha Te Krita Prajavasaye Vibhajani Bhojanam Avitklavate Parikan Manishtito Mame Samudnadha Madho Jamanina Yavat Sakha Sakya Ivesha Te Krita Bhajavasage Vibhagami Bhojanam Avikrahaste Parikarmani Stito Mame Samud Mame Yava, as it is. Saka, friend. Sakhyu, unto the friend. Iva, like that. Isha, O Lord. Te, you. Krita, have accepted. Praja, the living entity. Visarga, in the matter of creation. Vibhajami, as I shall do it differently. Bho, O my Lord. Janam, those who are born. Aviklava, without being perturbed. Te, your. Parikarmani, in the matter of service. Sita, thus situated. Ma, may it never be. Ne, unto me. Samudnadha, resulting arise. Madha, madness. Aja, O unborn one. Manina, thus being thought of. Translation. Is Brahma speaking? O my Lord, the unborn, you have shaken hands with me just as a friend does with a friend, as if equal in position. I shall be engaged in the creation of different types of living entities, and I shall be occupied in your service. I shall have no perturbation, but I pray that all this may not give rise to pride, as if I were the supreme. Lord Brahma is definitely situated in the humor of friendship with the Lord. Every living being is eternally related with the personality of Godhead in one of five different transcendental humors, namely Santa, Dasya, Sakya, Vatsalya, and Madhurya. We have already discussed these five kinds of humors in relationship with the personality of Godhead. It is clearly exhibited herein that Lord Brahma is related to the personality of Godhead in the transcendental humor of friendship. A pure devotee may be related with the Lord in any one of the transcendental humors, even in the humor of parenthood, but the devotee of the Lord is always a transcendental servitor. No one is equal to or greater than the Lord. That is the version of the Bhagavad Gita. Brahmaji, although eternally related with the Lord in the transcendental humor of friendship, and although entrusted with the most exalted post of creating different grades of living entities, is still conscious of his position, that he is neither the Supreme Lord nor supremely powerful. It is possible that some extremely powerful personality, within or without the universe, may sometimes show more power than the Lord himself. Still, the pure devotee knows that this power is a vibhuti delegated by the Lord, and such a delegated powerful living entity is never independent. Sri Hanumanji crossed the Indian Ocean by jumping over the sea, and Lord Sri Ramchandra engaged himself in marching over the bridge, but this does not mean that Hanumanji was more powerful than the Lord. Sometimes the Lord gives extraordinary powers to his devotee, but the devotee always knows that the power belongs to the personality of Godhead and that the devotee is only an instrument. The pure devotee is never puffed up like the non-devotee class of men who falsely think that they are God. It is astonishing to see how a person who is being kicked by the laws of the Lord's illusory energy at every step can falsely think of becoming one with the Lord. Such thinking is the last snare of the illusory energy offered to the conditioned soul. The first illusion is that he wants to become lord of the material world by accumulating wealth and power. But when he is frustrated in that attempt, he wants to become one with the Lord. So both becoming the most powerful man in the material world and desiring to become one with the Lord are different illusory snares. And because the pure devotees of the Lord are surrendered souls, they are above the illusory snares of Maya. Because Lord Brahma is a pure devotee, even though the first dominating deity in the material world, and therefore able to do many wonderful things, he would never, like the non-devotee with a poor fund of knowledge, have the audacity to think of becoming one with the Lord. People with a poor fund of knowledge should take lessons from Brahma when they are puffed up with the false notion of becoming God. Factually, Lord Brahma does not create the living entities. In the beginning of the creation, he is empowered to give different bodily shapes to the living entities according to their work during the last millennium. Brahmaji's duty is just to wake the living entities from their slumber and to engage them in their proper duties. The different grades of living entities are not created by Brahmaji by his capricious whims, but he is entrusted with the task of giving the living entities different grades of body so they can work accordingly. And still he is conscious that he is only instrumental, so that he may not think of himself as the supreme, powerful Lord. Devotees of the Lord are engaged in the specific duty offered by the Lord, and such duties are successfully carried out without hindrance because they are ordained by the Lord. The credit of success goes not to the doer, but to the Lord. But persons with a poor fund of knowledge take the credit of success into their own account and give nothing to the credit of the Lord. That is the symptom of the non-devotee class of men. Translation again. Oh my Lord, the unborn, you have shaken hands with me just as a friend does with a friend, as if equal in position. I shall be engaged in the creation of different types of living entities, and I shall be occupied in your service. I shall have no perturbation, but I pray that all this may not give rise to pride, as if I were the supreme. Om Ajnana Simha Vishaya Ajnana Simha Sarasvati. suffering upon me, it does not please it anymore. As you all know, everyone is eternally related to the Supreme Lord. But in material life, we have forgotten that relationship with Krishna, and we seek that sublime taste of relating to the Lord. We seek it in this world of matter. And therefore, we're frustrated. Just like we were hearing our friend last night speak of his frustrations. He was looking for the Parama Rasa, the supreme taste within the material world. It's amazing how we are ready to struggle to get that taste in the material world. No one has found it before, but each person thinks, I'll get it. And in this way, you willfully accept so many austerities in life. Working and studying and commuting and tolerating and being embarrassed and humiliated and pushed down and bewildered and cheated. Just to try to achieve your hopes of getting that supreme taste. You try to relish that flavor of relationship in your family life, in romance, in friendship, by having others serve you. In this way, you're looking for that original pure spiritual taste, but you're looking in the wrong place. It's very difficult for materialists to understand the wealth of a devotee. Just like you all seem to have no security, you seem to have no opulence, but actually you have the opportunity to develop the immeasurable spiritual wealth of bhakti. To the vision of the materialist, your lives are barren. But to the vision of a devotee, your lives are full of transcendental opulences and variety and pleasure. The real opulences in life are service to Krishna, hearing and chanting the glories of the Lord, associating with those who are serving Krishna. This is the wealth of life. Surrounding your senses with spiritual sense objects. Everyone recognizes that prasad is very important. The spiritual opulence of prasad. The prasad graces your tongue, then you become enlivened. There's not simply prasad for the tongue in bhakti yoga. There is prasad for the ears, for the nose, for the eyes, for the sense of touch. All your senses have full scope in Krishna consciousness. So don't feel like your senses are starving because you're depriving them of material enjoyment. Immerse your senses in bhakti yoga. Smell things offered to Krishna. Consciously do that during your day. Smell things offered to Krishna. Before you take the prasad, or while you're taking it, smell it. The aroma is of the spiritual world. Smell the flowers and incense offered to the Lord. Get your nose into action. And see all the things of Krishna consciousness. See the form of the Lord. See opportunities for devotional service. And, of course, hear the glories of the Lord. hear discussions about how to serve Krishna better. Hear discussions about the illusions of material life. And engage your sense of touch also. Touch your japa beads, move them back and forth while moving your tongue. Naturally, while you're serving, you bump into other devotees, hopefully of the same gender. And so, that is considered devotional. And what else? All the senses have their full expression in devotional service. When you understand this secret, then you won't get that starved sense gratification feeling. Maybe sometimes you feel like a hungry wolf in the Arctic because you've been starved. So you haven't had any sense gratification for so long, and your material senses start to howl. Ooh, ooh. When that happens, you have to know what to do. You immerse yourself in spiritual sense objects. And of course, the more you are immersed in spiritual sense objects, the less the hungry wolf of sense gratification has an opportunity to howl. In this way, you can see that the job, the career of a devotee is to pack his or her life with spiritual sense objects. That's how you have fun in Krishna consciousness. It's also fun to endeavor for Krishna. This is something you have to understand. In material life, you've had experience. It's no fun to struggle and endeavor for something. But in Krishna consciousness, it's actually pleasurable to struggle to serve Krishna in some way. So don't bring your material conceptions into spiritual life. That's what the impersonalists do. Struggling is arduous and frustrating in the material world. Therefore, in spiritual life, we won't try to struggle and serve. We just imagine we are one with everything. But, no, spiritual life means that even when there's a struggle, when you have to tolerate, sometimes you really have to tolerate and accept some inconvenience. The taste is sweet because you're doing it for Krishna's pleasure. It's a very valuable experience for devotees to have to do something that ordinarily they wouldn't do. And to have to struggle begging Krishna for his mercy. In this way, you build your spiritual muscles, so to speak. You try to increase the amount of weight you can lift. Gradually. In this way, your spiritual capacity for love expands. You should always be trying to improve your service to Krishna. If you're a cook, learn how to be the best cook for Krishna's pleasure. If you clean, learn how to clean so nicely. You can attract people to Krishna consciousness just by cleaning so wondrously. Srila Prabhupada said, people should come and notice that our places are revolutionary clean. That will attract. And it will also make the devotee's mind very clean and peaceful. Whenever I come, I always notice how that place is. But I stay so clean. Yeah. Whatever you do, try to improve your offering to Krishna. Learn different skills. Learn the books and how to present them. Learn how to distribute books. Learn how to play musical instruments for the pleasure of the Lord. In this way, have a full life in Krishna consciousness. Don't be afraid of a little struggle. Just like on book distribution, it can seem to be a struggle at first, but once you immerse yourself, you find that you are absorbed in the flood of Lord Chaitanya's mercy. You are doing the greatest service for others. You're directly intervening in their network of karma and rearranging their actions and reactions for many births. You are being Krishna's instrument for rearranging their complete existence. Their life will never be the same after they've met you on the street or at their door. You're affecting not only this life of theirs, but you're affecting their previous lives too. This is how magnificent and magnanimous and huge this service is of introducing Krishna consciousness to others, especially through books. Yes, ordinarily if someone would say, you know, I'm on a mission sent by God, people would laugh. But the Sankirtan devotee can feel like that. Yes, I'm on a mission from God. On behalf of Krishna, you are intervening in people's karma, and you're reducing their suffering. Just by their meeting you and treating you favorably, you're reducing their suffering. And you're being Krishna's instrument for implanting the seed of bhakti in their life. We cannot do that service when we are selfish. Becoming selfish is the great enemy of devotees. That is what destroys the happiness of Krishna consciousness, when devotees become selfish and just try to suit themselves and do whatever convenient for them. Lord Chaitanya wants us to voluntarily accept inconveniences for helping others. Then your loving capacity expands. Lord Chaitanya says that he presents himself in Chaitanya Charitamrita as just a gardener. I'm a gardener, and I have these fruits of love of God. What can a gardener do? A gardener is not very powerful or wealthy. I'm just a simple gardener with this tree, with the fruits. I can't distribute all these fruits alone. In this way, Lord Chaitanya is indicating that we should all work together to spread love of God. Lord Chaitanya appeals, please assist me in distributing these fruits of love of God. And he says in the Adi Lila, not only am I the gardener, but I'm also the tree. And not only do I distribute the fruits of the tree to everyone, and they become mad with ecstasy and love of Krishna, but I also taste the fruits myself, and I become mad with the ecstasy of love of God. This way, Lord Chaitanya is indicating, not only do you distribute, but you also taste for yourself. This is what we would like you all to demonstrate. Tasting the fruits of love of God and distributing them simultaneously. Lord Chaitanya is asking for your assistance. He's saying, I cannot distribute these fruits alone. I'm just a gardener. Of course, Krishna can do anything. But he's giving you a chance. He's giving us a chance to get some credit. Lord Brahma has a chance to render service to the Lord. And again in this verse, just as we heard yesterday, Brahma is praying to the Lord, let me act so I don't become conditioned, let me act so I don't become proud. This is a devotee's constant prayer. Because as I pointed out yesterday, we're so quick to become proud and have our egos inflated. We do one thing right and our head swells. We should hear this example of Lord Brahma, who's mindful of the dangers of the head swelling, and who prays to the Lord, let me do the service in a humble state of mind. Now, Brahma's service is so powerful. He's generating living entities. Not exactly creating living entities, but he's generating their bodily situations in this world. And he's waking up the living entities after the cosmic annihilation so that they'll start acting again according to their karma. You see, during a cosmic annihilation, the living entities don't, you know, it's not that your slate is wiped clean. No, you go to sleep for a long time with your karma. And then you are injected back into the new cosmos. And Lord Brahma provides you with the appropriate body according to your karma. And he wakes you and says, okay, start acting again. It's like, let's say, children go to an amusement park. And then when the day's over and the amusement park closes, instead of the children leaving, they're allowed to sleep there while everything in the amusement park is knocked down. And then in the morning, everything is set up again. And someone comes along and wakes the children. And they start jumping on the rides again. So Brahma, he generates the new bodies for the living entities according to their past karma. And he wakes them and gets them into action again. In this way, the living entities get a chance to fulfill their desires. We discussed yesterday how material enjoyment is an idea in the mind. You've got to be a little clever and catch it like this. Material enjoyment is an idea in the mind. And everyone's mind has has some kind of plan for material enjoyment. You can analyze yourself in this way. Within the mind, there is a desire for a particular type of material enjoyment. Now, the body never can match the mind's plans and hopes for material enjoyment. The body is just not capable of supplying all the things that our mind wants. Once you have this desire for material enjoyment, then you call forth all the material resources that you can. You can catch yourself doing this. First, within the mind, there's a particular desire to enjoy. And then, in order to fulfill those desires, you beckon all the material resources that you can to assist you in your quest. In this way, whether you know it or not, you treat yourself as if you are the Lord of material nature. You're summoning all the resources. Yes, come to me. I want to enjoy. Like I was asking Jen yesterday, why do ladies like to shop? So she said, well, you know. So she said, sort of imply, what else are they supposed to do on weekends? They're not all, very few of them are into sports like the men, so they got to do something, you know. The sport is shopping. So I said, well, there must be more of a reason than that. Said, yes, first, they want to. First of all, they want to make themselves more attractive. a constant quest to make himself more attractive. And then I point out, besides that, they think that the act of shopping fulfills them. They're getting things that will complete them, that they hope will give them a sense of completeness and fullness. Of course, this basic psychology is not just of the female, it's of all conditioned souls. You turn to material nature to supply you things to make you feel complete. The men have their cars and computers and tools and things like that. And the women have their world of cosmetics and dresses. Children also, they want children so they can feel complete, that they've produced something that they can exchange with. So, that is how we exist in the material world. First, within the mind, there's the desire to materially enjoy. And then you turn to material nature and beckon the resources. Come, come. Give me this, give me that. You expect that in your life. You expect you'll be surrounded by the appropriate resources for material enjoyment. Now, when you wise up and come to Krishna consciousness, you may feel like all that has been stripped from you. It may seem a little uncomfortable at first to be stripped of all your material resources and to be starved from material enjoyment. Sometimes, indeed, you may feel like a lonely, hungry wolf in the Arctic. No wolf pack to travel with. Stripped of all resources for enjoyment, like when you're a wolf in the Arctic and there's snow everywhere. Everywhere you look, you don't see anything for you. You see cold snow everywhere. And you get this hungry feeling in your belly. When am I going to be surrounded by things for me? In the ashram, devotees can definitely feel like that. How long do I have to live in this place in which I'm not surrounded by things for me? When will I once again have my own comfortable world, my own resources, my fingertip control, like a remote control? You may remember what it's like to watch television with a remote control in your hands. You're in control of power. So many people have this kind of approach to life now because of being television addicts. They think that the world is meant for their entertainment, and so they're constantly changing channels to get some stimulation for their mind, some entertainment. They approach the world like reality is a television. And they have the remote control. They treat other people like that, in case you haven't noticed. The girls and the boys treat each other like that. Okay, we'll click on you. Well, how can you entertain me? Oh, now it's time for another one. Click. This is the result of so much television watching, that people treat each other and the world like everything outside of you is on remote control television. And it's all meant for you. And you have a right to flick between channels according to your predilection. They don't feel reality. The reality is that they are bound in material life. Material life is absorbing them, enveloping them, digesting them, and spitting them out. They don't feel like that. They think they're outside of it all with a remote. They don't understand they're being chewed up by the process of material nature. What we are beginning in Krishna consciousness is we're reviving our relationship with Krishna. That's why, as we spoke yesterday, your service is most important. Your service attitude. When your life is full of service to Krishna, you feel alive. You are alive. And the less service that you have in your life, the more you are dead and dying. If you want to come to life, then see your life with devotional service. That's why you see people walk in here looking dead, because they have no service to Godhead. It doesn't mean they're not serving. Your eternal position is always to be a servant, whether directly or indirectly. You're not free, you're not independent, you are a servant in all circumstances. You're always serving Krishna, directly or indirectly. The nature of love of Krishna is such that even if you have a relationship with Krishna in a superior position, still you think of yourself as Krishna's servant. Just like Advaita Acharya. He's the Supreme Personality of Godhead. He calls Lord Chaitanya into this world by offering Ganges water to Tulsi Devi. With loud cries, he attracts the Supreme Lord, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, to come to this world. Advaita Acharya, he's the brother, he's the godbrother of Lord Chaitanya's spiritual master, Ishwara Puri. And Lord Chaitanya always treats Advaita Acharya as superior to show proper religious principles, proper dharma. But Advaita Acharya always sees himself as the servant of Lord Chaitanya. He says like that, I'm just a servant of Lord Chaitanya. Nityananda also, he's just a servant of Lord Chaitanya. So, in the spiritual world, even if you have a relationship with Krishna in which it seems you are superior, even if you are Krishna's parent or Krishna's elder or teacher, still you think you're the servant of Krishna. This is the amazing thing about love of God. Even those who have the apparently superior positions, they can tell, order Krishna to do something, or they can teach him. Still, they see themselves as Krishna's servants. Brahma, although he's acting in friendship with the Lord, shaking his hand, and he has that rasa of friendship, still he sees himself as a servant of Krishna. Shiva, Shukadev Goswami, the Kumaras, all these great personalities think that they are servants of the Lord. You see, because service, the relationship of service to Krishna is present in all the rasas. It's common to all of them. Therefore, even though Brahma has a relationship of friendship with the Lord, still, the basic thing he's tasting is servitorship. Lakshmi Devi, the goddess of fortune in Vaikuntha, she's always on Krishna's chest, but she wants to serve his lotus feet. She sees herself as Krishna's servant. And in Vrindavan, all the residents of Vrindavan, even if they're acting in positions superior to Krishna, they still see themselves as servants. Just like Nanda Maharaj, Krishna's father. He sees himself as a servant of the Lord. Not that he sees Krishna as God. Nanda Maharaj once told Uddhava that, all right, you may say Krishna is God, but I just see him as my son. In any case, all glories to your worshipful Lord Krishna. You can see him like that. All glories to your worshipful Lord Krishna. But I see him as my son. And Nanda Maharaj prays for service. Nanda Maharaj prays for service to the lotus feet of his son. When Uddhava was leaving Vrindavan to go back to Mathura, Nanda Maharaj led the residents of Vrindavan in offering a prayer. May our tongues always vibrate the glories of the Lord, may our minds always be absorbed in the Lord, and may our bodies always offer prostrated obeisances at his feet. In this way, even Nanda Maharaj, acting in the superior position as Krishna's father, sees himself as a servant of the Lord. And what about Krishna's friends in Vrindavan? It is described in Chaitanya Charitamrita how these friends fight with Krishna playfully. They even climb on his shoulders, but still they see themselves as servants of the Lord. And what about Krishna's girlfriends? They always refer to themselves as maid servants. The gopis of Vrindavan always see themselves in that way. Even Srimati Radharani sees herself as a maid servant to Krishna. When they're feeling separation from Krishna, they're calling out to Krishna, "We are just your maid servants. Come back and relieve the pain of separation felt by your maid servants. When will you put your a guru-scented hand on our head, your maid servants?" And the queens of Dwarka also. They're actually married to Krishna. The gopis in Vrindavan, they're not married to Krishna. That makes the pastimes of Krishna more exciting. But the queens of Dwarka, they have what might seem to be a safer relationship with Krishna. They're married. They're more in awe and reverence. Still, they see themselves as maid servants of Krishna. Rukmini, Lakshmana, Kalindi. You can read in this shastra how they offer prayers to the Lord as his maid servant. And when they're talking to other ladies, describing how they married Krishna, they're always saying, "We're just his maid servant. We're just engaged as his humble maidservant in his home." In this way, you can see how glorious devotional service is. The shastra explains that this feeling of servitude emanates from Lord Balaram to all the incarnations of Godhead. Therefore, all the incarnations of Godhead would rather be servants. Devotees, they'd rather be devotees than incarnations. And they all have that right. All the incarnations of Godhead have the right to appear as servants, as devotees. And they take that right in Lord Chaitanya's pastimes. And they taste more bliss being bhaktas than in being avatars. We've often commented how when people are frustrated with material pleasure in this world, they next think about becoming God. But here in Lord Chaitanya's pastimes, we see that God wants to be a devotee to taste the highest pleasure. Even Krishna himself wonders, what is it that the devotees are tasting? What's it like to be a servant of me? So he comes as Lord Chaitanya to taste what is service to Godhead. Can you do that? Is service to you so exalted that you think, "I wonder what it's like to serve me. Let me come as my own servant to taste what it's like." No. Mad conditioned souls are always thinking to become master. What would it be like if I was controlling everything? What would it be like if everyone did exactly what I said? This world would be a good place. That's what everybody's meditating on. If I could just get a few people to do exactly what I wanted, wouldn't that be great? But the incarnations of Godhead, who are actually masters in control, they want to taste the ecstasy of service to Godhead. And so in Chaitanya Lila, they appear as bhaktas, as devotees, to taste devotional service to themselves. In this verse, you hear about Lord Brahma shaking hands with the Supreme Lord. Still understand that Lord Brahma is acting as the servant of the Lord. When we fully understand the glories of devotional service, then we'll be very eager to make sure that we are fully absorbed in devotional service. That's why we say that Krishna consciousness is not a religious belief. You cannot believe your way through devotional service. You have to do it. You cannot just sit back and believe in Krishna. You have to render service with your senses. Put your life into it. Put your senses into it. Smell and hear and see and taste and touch for Krishna. Then people will be able to see the glories of devotional service. And Krishna will use you as his instrument so that others understand the value of devotional service. Any questions? Mind is always changing. Haven't you had experience that you really thought something was a certain way, and then the next moment, on the next day, you find out it was totally the other way? This is the mind. It's a very fickle thing. As you absorb yourself in devotional service, you're going to find that your identification with the body and mind loosens. It's like you have a coconut. And as the coconut matures, the inside of the coconut separates itself from the outside shell. So finally, the coconut gets so mature, if you shake it, you can hear the inside, which has totally detached itself, rattling on the inside. Similarly, by your engagement in devotional service, you're going to begin to notice the difference between yourself as spirit, soul, and the body and mind. That in the beginning it's merged together, but gradually by rendering bhakti yoga, you can notice the difference. The body is one thing, the mind is another thing. You'll wake up in the morning and notice your mind is situated one way, but it's just not where you're at. It's like waking up in the morning and there's clouds in the sky. It's all external to you. You may wake up in the morning and there's a particular mental disposition sitting in your mind, but it's just like clouds in the sky. You know it's not you. That's the value of a life of devotion. You get to be master of your mind. You start to see the mind just like clouds in the sky. They come and go, the mental thoughts. But in the beginning, you take your mind so seriously. And that's what causes suffering. Sure, you've all seen persons who really just are absorbed in their mind and they take it, they practically worship it. My mind is feeling like this, therefore I must do such and such because my mind They take it as a reality. Very painful life. Through the blissful austerity of serving Krishna, you can detach yourself from the mind and start to hear it rattle inside you. Lord Kapila Dev explained in the third canto of Bhagavatam that devotional service dissolves the subtle body, just like the digestive fluids dissolve food in the stomach. Subtle body means mind, intelligence, and false ego. Devotional service dissolves that. Those devotees whose lives are rich in devotional service, they have all this kind of wealth. Their subtle body is dissolving. They have spiritual sense objects. So we have to think more about the great wealth that we have available. Don't be bewildered by Maya into thinking that your lives are devoid of opulence, they're very barren. No, they're full. And you can make them even more full. Plunge your senses into devotional service. Come alive with your senses in Krishna consciousness. Chant and dance and take prasad and hear about Krishna, talk about Krishna, endeavor for Krishna. Don't mind the purification that comes your way as you endeavor for Krishna. Make this birth your last. Like yesterday you were asking, how to chant so that your mind doesn't wander and sit down to chant and so many things come to your mind, what you have to do. So while I was chanting this morning, I was thinking of your question. And so I... briefly. So I, in such a way as, not that I was, all while I was chanting, I was thinking about it, but just briefly I was thinking, how, what do I do that I don't get caught up in mental distractions? So I realized that I'm putting my emotions into my chanting. When you're emotionally invested in something, you pay attention. What you put your heart into, you pay attention to. Isn't that so, Kate? Don't you pay attention to what you put your heart into? So, if you put your heart into your chanting, you'll pay attention to it. Inject your heart into your chanting. Chant from the heart. Hare Krishna. Love to chant. Put your loving emotions into chanting the holy name, and you'll pay attention. But if you treat it just like some calisthenic, something external, and rattle it off, then it's easy to get distracted. But if you put your heart into it, then you pay attention. What you put your heart into, you pay attention. Because everyone's heart is very important to them. So you give your heart to the chanting, and you'll pay attention. And then you'll feel very balanced and full in Krishna consciousness. Your heart is meant for chanting. That is the main wealth of Krishna consciousness. Everyone's walking around with a trampled heart or a broken heart. But in Krishna consciousness, we solve the heart problem very easily by putting our hearts into chanting.
It's like our friend last night was talking about his devastated heart. Emptiness. Got no outlet for anymore for his heartfelt lust. You could see, anyone can see, if he would just put that longing into chanting Hare Krishna, seriously, he could achieve the perfection of life. So, you should all become heart chanters. Not that you seal the heart off, because you've been wounded in material life. No, the heart is meant for Krishna. Anything else? Mm-hmm. Are what? They're still serving him. For Krishna, there's nothing material. Material energy is for those who are rebelling against Krishna. They're serving him. But not in the way that Krishna wants. Not in the way that's best for them, but they're still serving Krishna. Krishna's full in himself. In any situation. He has his own energies. You can read in the 11th canto how, I believe it was Indra, he sent some devastatingly beautiful girls from the heavenly planets to test incarnation of the Lord. And what was the incarnation of the Lord's name?
Narayan.
And Narayan responded by generating, countless stunning, beautiful girls, showing that I don't need to go outside of myself. I'm full in myself. Yes, that was the particular service he was rendering to Lord Chaitanya. Like that. He knew that that would please Lord Chaitanya. And when Lord Chaitanya heard about it, he indeed was pleased. Because Raghunath Das Goswami used to invite Lord Chaitanya over for very nice lunches. He would use the money from his father to entertain the Lord for lunch. But then he stopped inviting Lord Chaitanya. And Lord Chaitanya was inquiring, why is it I'm not being invited anymore? And then other devotees told Lord Chaitanya that Raghunath Das, he thought this is just materially contaminated to take money from his father. Like that. And that Raghunath Das, he's now, for eating, he waits, he goes to get prasad, Jagannath prasad, that has been rotten and thrown to the cows. And Lord, and Raghunath Das Goswami picks through that, which the cows won't even touch. He gets his rice in that way, takes it home and washes it. So Lord Chaitanya heard about that and immediately went to Raghunath Das Goswami's bhajan kutir, place of worship, private place of worship. And Lord Chaitanya asked, I hear there's a big feast going on here. And Raghunath Das was very hesitant. I cannot offer this rice that I'm eating to the Lord. It's, you know, it's the refuse even of cows. But Lord Chaitanya insisted, you've been having feasts and not inviting me. So Raghunath Das didn't want to do it. Didn't want to give Lord Chaitanya any of that rice that he was eating. But Lord Chaitanya snatched some and ate it. He said, oh, this is so tasty. In this way, Lord Chaitanya indicated his appreciation of Raghunath Das's austerities. Whereas Maharaj Ambarish, you'll read about him in the ninth canto, he had extraordinary opulence, yet it was all dedicated to Krishna's pleasure. So it's according to what Krishna wants, the style of your service. Raghunath Das Goswami's service style was to demonstrate the perfection of vairagya, detachment, while being absorbed in the Lord's service. You've read in the first canto of Bhagavatam how, although Prichit Maharaj was emperor of the world and Shukadeva Goswami was a wandering Paramahansa Avaduta, they were both were actually on the same level. Still, for the sake of proper etiquette, Prichit Maharaj would present himself as the inferior to Shukadeva Goswami and ask him, please, let me hear Bhagavatam. Yes?
Was there a festival running around to be engaged while as a
guest? Yes, always think how you can do it better for Krishna. What kind of service do you have?
Cooking.
So, you should be thinking how you can be a top-notch cook for Krishna. Whatever service you have, think how you can do it better. Don't be spaced out. How you can clean better. How you can study the books better. How you can learn verses. How you can preach better. How you can cook. Everything. Always thinking how to do it better. How to make a nice offering. And that will require tolerance. I'm sure you've all noticed that just because you want to serve Krishna doesn't mean that everything just happens magically without an endeavor or struggle. I was asking one devotee in Los Angeles who runs the kitchen. I was saying, so what are some of the austerities you have to go through? So, after a big feast, you go into the kitchen the next day and all the implements are not in the place they should be. You know, you got to spend a half hour finding them. You know? So there's always some, you know, impediment you could really lose your temper about. The spoon I always use to make my preparation come out perfect, it's missing. I can't do without this special spoon. Who used it and misplaced it? It's always something. You have to learn to be tolerant in Krishna's service. That's part of the service, being tolerant. Sometimes being misunderstood. Sometimes being mistreated. That's, you know, part of life. But for Krishna, you tolerate. Always some major and minor quirks during the day that can throw you, right? You've noticed? Even the minor quirks, you know, they can seem to throw you. I remember when I just set up my computer for the internet yesterday. We were working on it, and so Jen had given us all the information. So then he went to go online, and who's online? To go to the window and holler over, "Hey, hey!" Finally, after about 5 minutes, Juliet comes to the window. So we have to get online to fix this thing. Who are you writing anyway?
Oh, my father.
She thought I fell for that one.
I was waiting for a letter from my father.
So, you know, there's always some quirk like that. And there's major quirks, too. It's amazing how the minor quirks can get you going, too. You notice that? I'm serving Krishna. Why isn't everything happening smoothly? For my service. And there's major quirks, too. Can't get along with this person at all. I just can't live with this person. It's preaching inconveniences. Like in the temple in London, Soho Street. It's right in the center of the city, Courtenay Place, multiplied by 50 times. Soho. So it's a perfect location for preaching. So people can come. But what happens when you try to sleep at night? Nightclubs all around. Can't sleep without earplugs. So that's a big austerity for the devotees who stay there. Can't have an easy life in this world. If you want to preach, don't expect an easy life. The pleasure in life is not in ease. It's in the effort to serve Krishna. And there's austerities for everyone. I wonder what it was like on a few days when it was hot here in the kitchen. Was it hot in the kitchen? Yeah. But still, you had to cook. You don't know what it's like to be on one flight after another in the economy section. Packed up back there. So many hours. The chairs are so small and you're wedged in between these, you know, materialists. Body is cramped. Whenever I take somebody traveling with me, they always reach the same conclusion. You know, at first, they're like really giddy when they, you know, leave Auckland, and get, you know, flying to Los Angeles. And by the time you go through North America to South America to Europe, they're like, "How do you do this?" How do you tolerate this? If you want to really make advancement in Krishna consciousness, you need some challenge that inspires you to become pure. So that you'll think, unless Krishna empowers me and gives me ability, I won't be able to do this. Ordinarily, I can't do this. So I have to keep my life pure and spiritually enriched so that Krishna will give me the ability to do this. And always think how you can improve your service. Put your intelligence into it, your heart into it. Like when I was having Chloe's artistic lunch yesterday, I could see that she's putting her life into her cooking. It's a whole artistic production. For the eyes and the tongue and the nose. The blueberries here and this and that and everything. It's a whole production. Which requires devotion, requires absorption. And just throw something together. That's the correct utilization of her artistic abilities. Yes, cooking is art. Anything else? Mm-hmm. Not only to save for mental distractions, but also because Krishna consciousness involves the perfection of emotions. What are your emotions for? Well, certainly the more you know Krishna, the more you'll want to give to Krishna. I used to use the example that I would say, just like in a mature relationship, the more you know a person, the more you're attracted. But these days, I think it's the reverse. The more you know somebody in a material relationship, the more you're repelled you are, you know. That's why they have these one-night affairs, you know, because they really don't want to get to know the person, you know. Just take everything at surface value, face value. As soon as you start looking deeply, you freak out. Based on where you're at, put your emotions into chanting, cry out to Krishna based on where you're at now. Just like a cat can purr, you know, like when you hear a cat purring, just sitting there purring, you can chant like that with contentment that you're engaged in Krishna's service. And of course, have meaningful relationships with other devotees based on helping others to become Krishna conscious and them helping you. Take advantage of the association of devotees. Always look at other devotees and see how they're doing something wonderful for Krishna that you're not doing. Like when I was eating lunch yesterday. Was it lunch or breakfast? Breakfast. I was thinking, well, I could never make a breakfast like this. So artistic in its visual presentation as well as its effect on the tongue. I was wondering, how does she do this? So you're always appreciating things that devotees do. How Krishna is so full of variety. And that way you'll always be have a sense of wonder and amazement in Krishna consciousness, if you're always relishing the devotee's different attributes in serving Krishna, that'll help you overlook the austerities and inconveniences which are there sometimes. You have to know how to see the wealth in Krishna consciousness. Otherwise, you'll just see the austerities of living with these people, having to deal with these same people. Sometimes there are personal problems and like that, but if you also are aware of the wealth, then you won't be capsized when there's some personal problem, disagreement. Sometimes devotees disagree how Krishna should be served. Sometimes devotees don't treat each other in the best way, and that can really hurt you. Sometimes devotees can disappoint you, but if you're in tune with the opulences and the wealth of devotional service, you won't be capsized. Also, what else did I taste yesterday? Very wonderful subject, by such a magical taste to it. I asked him, what were the ingredients? It just Prabhupada said, this is a kitchen religion. So all of you who like to eat, you should know how to cook. You know how to cook, too? Prabhupada said that if you know how to eat, you know how to cook. Because knowing how to eat means knowing what your tongue likes. That means you should know how to duplicate that in preparing the food. Because you know, you have a sense of what your tongue likes, so that should guide you in preparing something tasty to offer to Krishna. So use this opportunity you have to learn all these skills for serving Krishna, playing musical instruments, cooking, learn the books, teach it to others. That's the fun of being in this kind of situation. All right. Are you making breakfast again this morning? I get another artistic production. How many of those productions do you have? Endless varieties? This is always my point to you all. Be alive in Krishna's service. Be alive with your senses in bhakti yoga. All right. Hare Krishna. Krishna Krishna. Gaura Hare, Gaura Hare.